I just saw a second age of Apophis. My name is Tanji Tobias Pokolo, a chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Works of the National Assembly. And I welcome all ladies and gentlemen who came here. My office advised me that today we are going to take about four organizations. Going to start with Engineering Council of South Africa, followed by the National Society of Black Engineers of South Africa, followed by South African Institute of Architectural Technology, and then followed by the South African Council for the Landscape Architectural Profession. Actually, there are five, and South African Institute of Electrical Engineers. More than that, I thought we were about fancy. So, Van Wyk will be the last person. Before I allow honorable members and ladies and gentlemen to introduce yourselves, I'm also advised that at 12:30 I need to attend the meeting of the chairpersons. At that point, I'll ask one member to chair for about an hour, then I will come back to continue where we ended. I have also made copies of the engineering use for honorable members. I hope my officers have seen that, Khadija, because I have received an interesting article from ICSA. I think the chairperson of ICSA spoke to a gentleman called, let me just check, the name of the gentleman that he spoke to. Terence Creamer, and I think it's Mr. Savar who spoke to it. So I have made copies to honorable members. I think we should also make copies to ICSA, the article on engineering is about the strong of built environment professions make strong objections to draft framework. Video clip, ICSA CEO Professor Ravi Nayaga in conversation with the engineering news editor Terence Creamer on why it is objecting to a draft framework for built environment professions. Camera person that needs to be editing Darlene Creamer. My copies will make copies. But at some point I would like to make comments on it. But nevertheless, without any waste of time, let's give ICSA an opportunity to give us a presentation. Before that, let's introduce ourselves, honorable members, and then we also have... Are there ladies here this side? Do I see you accept Mrs. Bigby? Do we have ladies from ICSA? Nothing. Is there any ladies from ICSA? Quite far at the back, eh? She playing a very minimal role. Okay, no, that's fine. We always check whether are we true to the transmission agenda that also women should be part of, but far at the periphery. I assume it's okay for now. Honorable, no one. Do you think it's okay? Okay, no, that's fine. Yeah, let's quickly introduce ourselves, honorable members, and we also allow our guests to introduce themselves.
My name is Lawrence Mato. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Doris Nguyen, member of Public Works Portfolio Committee.
Kingu Pega Khatebe, ilungu lale committee.
My name is Mambe Ramotsamai, Portfolio Committee member, Public Works.
Before we continue, honorable members, we don't have translation here. Is it possible to speak English just for today? We will not have translation or in 11 official languages. So I don't know whether people understood you, honorable member, because then we'll have to ask the translators to come here and translate that.
Honorable
honorable member, I'm going to insist only for today. The translators are not the Obukebo Bukona everywhere. You know, Shala Bukona all the time. But for today, let's make communication possible.
So thank you, Chairperson. I'm Peggy Khatebe, the member of this committee.
Thank you.
Certainly, Opperman, member of this committee.
That's Opperman, how we have a book.
Saki Bansha, a member of this committee.
Can't you speak to Sotosaki?
Madam Chair, you've hindered me. Today is my day for Suswati, and I really wanted to speak it.
Kaucho, I believe, again.
I'm the least speaker. I'm not a member of this committee. I'm just sitting in.
Well, you are welcome to sit in the committee. Well, at the back here, we've got our staff members, but I see them. Our legal advisors, can we quickly introduce ourselves?
Thank you, Chair. I'm Gido Nguyen from the Office of the Chief Special Advisor.
Thank you.
I'm Niece Stephanie, the researcher for the Portfolio Committee on Public Works.
Mhlali Majila, Representative ANC, Public Works.
Good morning, sir. I'm Akona Pusakwe, the Committee Secretary.
That's the lady you communicate with most of the time. Then may we come to this side, please?
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Truman Goba, President of the Engineering Council, South Africa.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ravi Nayaga, CEO of Engineering Council.
Hugh Hanrahan, I'm representing the Engineering Council.
Thank you.
Priyasha Kame, Engineering Council.
Alec Hayer, Engineering Council.
Henan Fazyun, Engineering Council.
Yeah, as we've just said, Madam Chair, I'm Mr. Madonsela, today representing the National Society of Black Engineers.
My name is Ron Kamete. Today I'm representing students of National Society of Black Engineers.
Good morning, Hendrik van der Werven, President of SAC Club.
Should I introduce myself as well? Okay. Adam Tombin,
Department of Public Works.
I always say that he's part of the portfolio committee, so he shouldn't introduce himself.
Lydia Bickley, Department of Public Works.
Devon Play, Department of Public Works.
Shangarani Mjali, Department of Public Works.
Jessica Murthy, Department of Public Works.
Well, Shangarani, your name is very important for this process. You see, we're talking about integration, and that's what your name is. So it's very interesting that you are here today to integrate these institutions that are sitting here today.
Devon Homalachi, Lofter, Public Works.
David Buta, Institution of Civil Engineering.
Isaac Oliver, Council for the Built Environment.
Becky Zulu, Council for the Built Environment.
Saroj Modi, Council for the Built Environment.
Peter Brown, President of the South African Institute of Architectural Technologists.
Senna Bengu, National Society of Black Engineers.
Neil Smuts, Fellow of the Institute of Electrical Engineers and Chairman of the Southern Cape Center.
Larry Kood from with the South African Institute of Electrical Engineers and Chairman of the Western Cape Center.
Morning, Adam. I'm representing Electrical Engineers, Roderick Harker, and I'm a past Chairman, President of the Council.
Good morning, Ian McKechnie. I'm the immediate past President of the South African Institute of Electrical Engineers. And I'd also just like to, in her absence, our KZN Center Chair, Janet Gillespie, unfortunately is still on her way back from the airport, and she'll be joining us as well.
Lozizo Chinganda from ECTA.
Can you repeat that number? I missed it.
Lozizo Chinganda from ECTA.
No, I'm Bob Pullen from ECTA.
Good morning, I'm Philip Wist. I'm representing Sasol.
Good morning, madam. I'm Cecil Rose, past president of the South African Association of Consulting Engineers.
Did you say Cecil Rose?
And I'm
how many juniors have you followed? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I can see you up here from PMG.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Shirley Williamson from PMG.
Nancy Kinkross from Lionel Mother, Shunset and Lavitani. Nancy Kinkross from Lionel Mother, Shunset and Lavitani.
To give refreshments to the team I see today, it's quite a big meeting. I hope you do have enough tea and sugar for everybody over here. Thank you very much. Let them give EXA an opportunity. I did indicate that I will make my comments later, but let us allow them to make a presentation.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Public Works. Once again, my name is Truman Goba. I'm president of EXA, and with me on my left-hand side is the CEO of EXA, Professor Ravi Nayagar. I'm very pleased also that the members of council, at least seven of them, are in this room. Five of them is delegation of EXA this morning. I'll start with the vice president sitting right at the back, Mr. Bob Pullen, and four other members of our council, Mr. Pirosho Kame of CORE, Dr. Nozi Chinkanda, having had the Madam Chair comment earlier, Dr. Nozi Chinkanda actually chairs our Finance and Staff Committee. Mr. Alec Hay, who is Vice Chairman of the International Affairs Committee, but is a member of Council as well. Mr. Moses Madiba, also member of Council, Regional Director for Roads, and Nakuru Leni is also president of the institute.
Excuse me, Mr. Koba, I'm going to request you to do the presentation because we've got a very tight schedule for today. So if we get through the list of names and the people's positions, it might consume some of the time. Actually, people were allocated 30 minutes, but I'm open to an hour in the evening. But let's look at the presentation because we don't have enough time. MPs are only allowed to work from 10 until 5. If I take them beyond that time, I must give them refreshments, you see, and my committee does not have that. And transport.
Thank you.
When the bus leaves them, they need transport back home. So we can only work until 5 today.
Okay. I must thank the Madam Chair and the Portfolio Committee and the Secretariat for the opportunity and also for facilitating our submissions today. Since yesterday also, we've noted some points which have already been raised by others during the hearings, also making comments about EXA. The time needed for our presentation today is quite short, in fact. We would have preferred to have more time for presentations. And also we hope that we'll have a chance to respond to some of the questions as the Madam Chair promised yesterday. Okay, on our next slide, we outline the presentation this morning. We'll start with the summary of the problems identified in the March 2008 policy document that motivate the bill. The engineering profession itself, how the present Engineering Profession Act is working. Does the bill provide the solutions to the identified problems? What are the detailed problems with the bill at this stage? And also, we present the recommendations. First of all, Madam Chair, let me say that EXA is very much aware of the new framework now proposed by the Department of Public Works, by the Minister, and is concerned that it's the Act that will make it work. EXA places on record that the bill as it stands at the moment just happens to have such a number of negative effects on the engineering profession that it is not ready for consideration by Parliament in the present form. There was no thorough consultation, and EXA was not consulted during the preparation of the policy. Like the honorable members, EXA would prefer to see in operation a system that works and which brings improvements to the current system and benefits of society. On the next slide, we list the identified problems as we understand them, coming out of the policy document. First of all, the autonomy of the professional councils leads to duplication of facilities, low income for small councils.
Can you go a little bit slower because we want to capture the points you made?
Okay, Madam Chair, I'm just trying to meet the time. The slides are also part of the presentation, which is, I hope the members have the copies with them. Also, there are lost opportunities for shared services. That's what we understand as the first problem. The other one is the low level of registration, because not compulsory, which means a loss of income to councils, an inability to sustain duplicated infrastructure. Thirdly, we understand that governance and accountability are problematic because of disjunctures between, on the one hand, the legislation of the council and the CBE legislation. Fourthly, regulatory bodies are seen as fragmented, have fragmented planning processes and lose advantages of integrated planning. For example, the lack of a swift response to the skills shortage in the sector. Fifthly, access to the professions is identified as a challenge. Shortage of previously disadvantaged persons as professionals in the sector. This shortage is seen to be due in part to the lack of coordination between councils. The next slide, I'd like us to consider what engineers do. Essentially, the professional activity of engineering is that it serves the needs of the people, economic development, and the provision of services to society. Engineering involves the purposeful application of mathematical and natural sciences, engineering science, technology, and techniques. It seeks to produce solutions to effects that are predicted to the greatest degree possible in often uncertainty context. It has potential adverse consequences and therefore must be carried out responsibly and ethically, using available resources efficiently, economically, safeguarding health and safety, environmentally sound and sustainable, and managing risks throughout the entire life cycle of a system. In the next slide, we list the disciplines and sub-disciplines in South Africa, including aeronautical, agricultural, chemical, civil, electrical, industrial, mechanical, metallurgical and materials, and mining. I won't go through the list of sub-disciplines. In the next slide, the engineering categories include the professional engineers, professional engineering technologists, professional engineering technicians, professional certificated engineers. In addition, we have specified categories of lift inspectors and lifting machinery inspectors. Can I say the engineering professional categories are described in Table 2 of the text submission, which is made available to members today. Members will be able also to read in paragraph 4.3 of the submission about the relation between engineering on the one hand and the built environment on the other. But I want to say on this slide that the wide range of engineering disciplines and sub-disciplines are of interest to many government departments and industry, and you can see in the table as presented. On the left-hand side, we include the Department of Agriculture, Department of Communications, Department of Defense, Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, Department of Housing, Department of Health, Department of Labor, Department of Minerals and Energy, Department of Public Enterprises, Department of provincial and local government, public service, Department of Public Works, our host department, Department of Science and Technology, Department of Trade and Industry, Department of Transport, Department of Water Affairs and Forestry. And across, you can see aeronautical, agricultural, as I've already mentioned in the previous slide. And the shaded blocks there indicate the various extent to which our profession is involved in the various departments in government. In the next slide, we present the Engineering Profession Act and how it's working at the moment. The six 2000 acts that regulate the built environment professions evolved from an inclusive and thorough process between 1994 and 1999, which led to a policy document in 1999, the six acts themselves, and the CBE Act of 2000. We want to look at the essential principles of the 1999 policy. What has been EXA's experience, we'll also look at, and how and the achievement under the Engineering Professions Act of 2000. Firstly, statutory regulation of professions has two goals. Firstly, protecting the standards of professional competence. And secondly, protecting the interests of the public and providing a means of recourse if these interests are infringed. Secondly, information and advice from professions is essential to national development, and contribution must be maximized and coordinated. Thirdly, professional regulation should not interfere in market forces and must be consistent with the competition policy. Public protection needs to apply in relation to aspects of professional conduct. Fourthly, healthy, symbiotic, clearly defined relationship must exist between the professional bodies and related voluntary associations. Fifthly, while professions must meet specific needs of South African communities, international best practices have to be followed in professional practice and development of registered persons. Professions should contribute to the global competitiveness of South African services. Sixthly, the monitoring and evaluation of professional competence and practice depend on professional expertise. Professional regulation must rely on the expertise of individual professionals to ensure a clear focus on the public as opposed to professional interest. Independent representation of the public interest is also required. Lastly, the regulatory framework must make provision for the commonalities as well as the differences between the professions. And the next slide, resulting from this policy, the Engineering Professions Act has proved to be an effective legal basis for regulating the engineering profession at this stage. Engineering Council South Africa has fully documented standards, policies, procedures for accreditation, training, registration, continuing professional development and discipline. Standards are registered on the NQF, Madam Chair. There exists ongoing improvement of processes. The Engineering Council South Africa strongly supports the provision for compulsory registration via identification of engineering work. Engineering Council completed its identification of engineering work in 2006 and submitted it to the Council for the Built Environment, CBE, with a recommendation for the Minister to promulgate it. That was in 2006. Next, the operation of the Engineering Profession Act has been basically sound, despite the shortcomings, and needs some minor improvements, which EXA has already proposed. In the next slide, in serving society, EXA interactions with various other stakeholders have been most successful. The Department of Labor, for example, specified categories were introduced for lift inspectors and for lifting machinery inspectors at the request of the Department of Labor. Government certificates of competence. So, secondly, with the Department of Minerals and Energy, what has been a point of liaison has been on government certificates of competence. With the Department of Education, the Higher Education Qualifications Framework implementation has been a point of discussion. On GIPSA, increased Bachelor of Engineering outputs, the technicians and technologists, academic vacancies, and so on. With the Council for the Higher Education, the Memorandum of Understanding on Program Accreditation. With the South African Qualifications Authority, a Memorandum of Understanding. With the Higher Education South Africa, we also have dealings. Also the deans responsible for engineering programs in South Africa. They meet regularly with EXA, at EXA. More than 29,000 total registered persons are on our database, including 6,800 candidates registration. 56%, that is more than half of our new registrations in the past 3 years, are previously disadvantaged individuals. 5,000 foreign nationals have taken interest in our registration system and are part of our database now. The Engineering Council has accredited all existing BEng, National Diploma and BTEC programs. The Engineering Council is a signatory to international agreements in which about 21 countries are involved, and we listed these in our earlier submission. The members of, honorable members can go through the list of those countries. EXA is a signatory to the Washington Accord. South Africa holds the vice chair position of the Washington Accord through Prof. Hannah Anrahan on my left here. The Sydney Accord, the Dublin Accord, the Engineers Mobility Forum. South Africa holds the chair, and Mr. Alec Hay is the chairman, in also in this room. The Engineering Technologies Mobility Forum. EXA, therefore, ensures that its standards are benchmarked internationally, and any loss of recognition will impact badly for South Africa's competitiveness. In the next slide, we start talking about on whether or not the bill does provide solutions on the identified problems. Problems 1 and 2 relate to autonomy of councils and capacity of small councils. EXA manages to sustain its own infrastructure, staff, and processes from fee income only. However, I must point out, EXA is also vulnerable should we need to investigate large cases of misconduct. EXA recognizes that councils with small numbers of registered persons may lack capacity. Shared infrastructure is a potential solution to problems of small councils. EXA has not seen any business plan that demonstrates an efficiency gain so far, but EXA has made a proposal in this regard in the past. The offer has not yet been taken up. Additional funding should come from Treasury. Cross-subsidization of councils from fee income is not acceptable. Does the bill provide solution to problem number 3? This is supposed to be caused by the disjuncture between the council's registration and also the CBE legislation. EXA is at a disadvantage in commenting because the types of governance and accountability failures that have not been identified. We make a comment here focusing on the suitability of the proposed council and the professional boards. We ask, what do councils and boards have expertise to do? Let's look at the proposal. Council at the moment for the new South African Council for the Built Environment is supposed to consist of 6 community representatives not registered, 4 state employees, 2 higher education representatives, six professional people coming from the current six councils. It is one professional person per profession. So we end up with approximately 18 members of the new council, one of them a professional. The board membership consists of 20 professionals maximum. That's what the bill says. 20% of community representatives who are not registered, minimum. Persons from the state departments, persons from higher education, a person versed in law. That's what the bill says. In the next slide, we start asking what functions are required for a regulatory body for professionals, like envisaged in the SACDE bill. We list here core regulatory functions, setting standards for education qualifications, evaluating and accrediting education programs, entering mutual recognition agreements for qualifications, evaluating qualifications not accredited or recognized, determining standards of competency for registration, providing guidance for training and mentoring, assessing competence of applicants for registration, determining requirements for continuing professional development, implementing a code of professional conduct, investigating complaints of unprofessional conduct and imposing sanctions, entering mutual recognition agreements for registration. And Madam Chair and the honorable members would agree that in the interest of engineering, all these functions need certain competences of professionals, whether technologists or technicians or engineers, as well as all the nine disciplines in the case of engineering. In the next slide, we list what are really needed also, operational functions. These include, in general, ensuring that the SACBE policies and processes for all the above functions are transparent and are applied fairly. Supporting the council, the boards and the committees, keeping registers and listing consistently and reliably. Supporting the processes and governance of the core functions, it was the list A functions. Managing finances, operating as cost efficiently as possible, seeking cooperation with other bodies as necessary, and more. And the next slide, we list the general functions which are needed in service of society, which is the focus of the councils. These include providing information and advice essential to broader national development, cooperating and participating in strategic planning with other professional bodies, voluntary associations, government, industry, and community organizations as needs arise, liaising with education providers in the field, liaising with employers who provide training and employ registered persons in the profession, promoting human resource development in the profession at the educational, training, and practice levels, identifying problems and bringing these and possible solutions to the attention of the relevant authority, identifying blockages and promoting access to the profession. So, what does this mean for composition and efficiency? We have in the left column the group of functions, as we've just talked about, list A, list B, list C. Required for composition, for core regulatory functions, you could say from that list at governance level, you would need, say, 60-40. And 60-40 meaning 60 peers, these are professionals, and 40 others. At working level, you need at least 80-20. In other words, even with the A list, we still allow for, at working level, we allow for 20% to be non-registered persons, as we feel that this is still needed. The economies of scale with that, as you can see, is a slight for that row. operational level, we can do with 60-40. We don't need 80-20. For general functions in service to society, we can do with 50-50, and we have to make sure that communities are represented. The result is that for core regulatory functions, they must be the sole preserve of the boards and must not be usurped by council. Secondly, council is not properly constituted as the bill stands at the moment for functions B and C. Therefore, the bill fails in terms of governance of professions, improving the current status, including accountability. Problem four, does the bill provide solutions? Problem four being a fragmented planning process. For example, lack of swiftness in responding to shortage of skills. The differences between the professions were recognized in Principle 7 of the policy, 1999 policy, as we said earlier. Secondly, the integrated planning is clearly necessary on cross-disciplinary issues that affect the built environment. We must include the land surveying, town and regional planning, and environmental practitioners. They are not part of the bill at the moment. The current CBE should be taking the lead in such planning. Thirdly, engineering, however, is practiced in many areas outside the built environment. Matters do arise where, firstly, only engineering is involved. It's such a wide field on its own. Secondly, planning may involve partners outside the built environment. Forcing boards to plan and communicate through councils may be inefficient. Addressing shortage of skills all from the various professions, all through one council, would be inefficient. Next slide. Finally, does the bill as presented provide solutions? This is the problem of access to the profession caused by the shortage, which causes the shortage of previously disadvantaged individual professionals, as the allegation goes. In other words, we're talking about blockages in the development pipeline. You can see there, we start from school education, we go into engineering higher education, training and experience, and practice. Registration for the honorable members happens in between training and experience and practice. And this is where we are involved with, on the pipeline with registration. First of all, the blockages due to school performance. Reports say there's poor maths and science. 80% of schools are dysfunctional. Affects black learners mainly. Former Model C schools are just average in maths and science. Secondly, with engineering higher education, there are blockages, the lower participation rate of black students. Rapid student growth numbers is affecting the higher education system. A decline in staff numbers, poor student preparedness is one of the problems. Training and experience, there are limited training opportunities, limited mentors, candidate posts, supervisors. Madam Chair, I must just mention that this is the development pipeline. Just to take a minute, I am South African, I'm black, I went through the schooling system in the townships. Higher education in South Africa, I finished my studies in 1979. In 1983, I was registered as a professional engineer. In other words, in 3 years' time, if you know what is required those days, of course, I needed a sympathetic mentor at the time. There's nothing in the system that prevented me to register. I went overseas, I studied, and I came back. I've enjoyed the privilege, and I contribute to the profession today outside my normal job, because I would have preferred more and more of us to have the opportunities that I have. But I cannot say that it was easy. It was extremely difficult. Apartheid meant it was extremely, almost impossible. Of the four of us who were given the Minister of Education letter approval to study at the White University at the time, I was the one who qualified first. Two of us eventually qualified. I was the first black person to qualify from the university. This is an indictment on the apartheid system. But we cannot sit and complain about it all the time. We have to look at what we've got, make the best out of it. We have our own government, we have our own officials, we have to move on. We have to make the best. We cannot move backwards. Today's systemic problems are our challenge. We have to face them, whether it's education, whether it's engineering, whether it's employers and so on. I'm not sure that the bill on its own can change the situation. Now, somebody said, the future is not for the faint-hearted. We need to move forward. In the next slide, we look at the major shortcomings of the bill. There is the council and there is the board governance. And the model is flawed in the sense that the composition of compromises peer judgment, which is the basis for all professions. Council should interfere in co-regulatory processes and compromise standards. And we do not deserve that. The country does not deserve that. Excessive ministerial authority, maybe not by intention, but no precedents, locally or internationally, exist. The loss of autonomy of existing councils, confiscation of assets built up from registrant fees. We were not part of the development of the policy. The interest of engineering at large is submerged within the built environment. Next, the possible forced change in training and registration processes. Conflict of laws and practical arrangements for engineering education. These have not been resolved. And the last slide, we are willing to assist. And even if we formed a task team with the department and so on, we would be happy. But we believe, as ECSA, that insufficient consultation has taken place to find solutions to the problems identified in the policy document. ECSA believes that the bill does not provide the solutions without adverse and unforeseen consequences. ECSA therefore recommends to the Portfolio Committee that the bill is not ready for a consideration by Parliament. The bill should be referred back to the Department of Public Works. The Department of Public Works should consult more widely to attend to these problems. We need a detailed business plan with full costing, which we can contribute to also, amongst others, on the basis of the successes that we've tried to maintain so far since the passing of the Engineering Professions Act of 2000. Madam Chair, in addition to all that I've said today, we've also submitted under 6.2 and 7.3 of the text, clause by clause, our concerns with the bill, and also submitted, in addition, a detailed, separate, clause-by-clause contribution for legal drafters to consider using in order to improve on the current bill in the interests of good legislation. Madam Chair, I thank you.
you very much. I can see that Honorable Blanche can't wait to speak. But it's okay, Honorable Man. I know you are an engineer yourself, so you feel so. But it's okay. My observation is that there's a lot of discussion that we're going to do on this presentation. Maybe we should start with you, Honorable Saki Blanche.
Madam Chair, I want to congratulate ICSA for putting it straight and down, because it serves Parliament to know what is happening there and to put things right. And I'm really pleased that they came this morning and spoke out of their hearts what should be done. And I have one or two questions that might be of interest. One, the first one is, should there not be more interaction between a parliamentary portfolio committee and the engineering fraternities, because it seems to me that's where we can go wrong in future. We as a parliamentary committee have an oversight function, and we tend to just look at the buildings and the things that have been built. But how we should do it in future is another problem. My question to ECSA is this. From what they have put to us, I understand that there's 5,000 foreign engineers waiting to be enlisted. Are these people coming from Southern Africa, coming from Africa? Because I think we also have a responsibility to ensure that what we do and the bills we create in this parliament are to the advantage of neighboring countries. And I firmly believe there are not enough professional institutions like ECSA in our neighboring countries to also absorb that. That's probably why we are getting people into our country and leaving those countries. And we should be assisting those countries. So my question is, where do these foreign applications come from? And should we not also then expand our activities as a portfolio committee to make sure neighboring countries follow our lead as far as this type of legislation is concerned?
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. That's my first question. I've got about four more.
No, you didn't indicate, but let's have those four more.
Yes, I noticed that we cater for electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, etc. Nowhere have I seen anything about air conditioning and refrigeration engineers, which is a vital profession that needs to be regulated as well, because South Africa produces a lot of...
Yeah, but what does that have to do with the bill, Honourable Member?
The bill says nothing about refrigeration and air conditioning engineers.
Today we're discussing the bill. Are you saying that the bill must talk about inclusion of professional...
I want to know whether there is any organization...
Yeah, but let's deal with that question. Let's deal with questions that relate to the discussion.
Madam,
we can look at...
Can I ask the question?
I'm saying...
Do we cater for refrigeration and...
No, Honourable Member, I'm making a ruling. I'm saying let us only concentrate on issues that relate to the bill. If we want to make recommendations in professions to have certain... councils will do that, but for now I'm ruling that we need to concentrate on the work before us.
I'm concentrating on the bill, and I'm saying there is nowhere in the engineering profession that I see representation for refrigeration and air conditioning engineers.
Yeah, but it's got nothing to do with the contents of the bill.
Maybe you think so, but I do.
I am telling you that, Honourable Member, it does not. You continue with your three other questions.
No, ma'am, you don't want to allow me to question them. I'll put them later.
Honourable Member, I'm not going to give you an opportunity later. I want you to raise your question.
You're first. In the chair, you can do as you wish.
Thank you. Honourable Maduma.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of ECSA's presentation, this consistent view that it has not been a thorough consultation. One would tend to believe that ECSA is an important stakeholder in the whole process. I do not know whether perhaps the department can assist us during the stakeholders forum at whether ECSA was not part of that. And if they were part of that, what contribution did they make
because it gives an impression that as an important stakeholder, Ghana is taking serious office. That's not something as the committee would like to believe. We need a clarity on that matter. But also, Chair, there is a feeling in terms of the analyze, the seven analyze principles that is not really assisting them as EXA. Now, I just want to know as to whether do they believe that this bill is really going to be a hindrance to those principles because of analyzed seven principles. And my take is that your impression of the bill is not really going to assist you in terms of at least driving the processes of EXA. So I'd like a clarity on that. I do not know what you mean when you say in page 9, professional regulation should not interfere with the market forces. I really do not know. Perhaps we need to unpack that. Because I do not think that at least as lawmakers would at least pass a bill that seeks to at least deal with what we are saying. Perhaps we need to unpack so that we better understand what you imply by that. Let me stop there for a while, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would actually just like to make a comment coming from outside. With my friend Lawrence over there, I used to be member of the Labour Committee.
Yes.
And my frame of reference is the Labour dispensation in this country. And coming from that background, I see within the Labour dispensation, workers organize themselves within trade unions. In the professional society, professionals organize themselves in professional bodies. But the one thought that came up as I listened to this presentation was, if the Department of Labor would propose a law that would say that the composition of the management of any trade union should consist of one laborer and 17 non-laborers, I think all hell would break loose in this country. For the very simple reason that there's a general principle in democracy that no decision should be made about us without us. And we all agree on that. And listening to this, I think we should deliberate. The department should also probably deliberate on this issue, whether we are going into the right direction when we legislate in a way that seems to abolish existing bodies and replacing it with a body that's being composed in a totally different way. It just doesn't make sense from the background I come from. Perhaps the department comes from another background. And then just a question for information. I would like do I understand it correctly that there are disciplines within the engineering profession that are not actually, they do not fall within the building environment? If I think about an electronical engineer, for instance, where will they be left? With the introduction of this bill, what will be the position of these people? Will they be regulated in any way?
Honorable Ramutamai.
Chairperson. Chair, I found the presentation of EXA quite a bit contradicting. On one hand, they say this bill, they're actually rejecting the bill and they don't want this bill to go ahead. On the other hand, I think there are quite quite very good suggestions that they've put for this bill for us as a committee to consider. And perhaps I think there's a need for us, there's a need for them to clarify to us, I mean, what they really want to do with the bill. The previous speaker is actually saying in the labor there's something within the disabled community that nothing about us without us. But when you look at this bill, you see, Chair, here we are talking about the future of this country. And that perhaps, in many instances, you do not have to leave such decisions on people who've got an interest on that only. And I think if you attach that only to those people, you will tend to be actually subjective in terms of dealing with the matter. I do want to say we as a committee as well have looked into this. And I think perhaps people would think that when you say people who, from the community, we actually mean people who've got an interest around this but may not be necessarily directed into that. Perhaps we must get a bit of clarity from the department what they mean about that. But it is important sometimes to avoid exactly what has been happening because people tend to be very subjective on issues that affect them alone and forget to look broadly in terms of the whole education and around those particular issues that they have to deal with. The other issue, Chair, that I would want to raise here is the issue of representation. I think the presenter gave us an outline of how representation is taken place around. But unfortunately, I don't know why this has happened. In other categories, you have specifically given us the numbers. But when you come to previous disadvantage, you gave us the percentage and not the figure. And I think for us, we want the demographics, we want the gender of that. That must be cut into pieces for us to understand the 56%, because as it stands, it does not have very much regulation. Chair, I want to emphasize the issue raised by my colleague on your principles of the 1999 policy. Professional regulation should not interfere with market forces. You seem to be speaking a very foreign. In this government, there is nothing that can be left to market forces. If you say that this regulation is interfering with market forces, that's exactly what we are about as government. That if you leave everything to market force, then the disaster is going to happen. That's why we have to regulate. Because it is not only market forces that must actually run this country. That's where government has got to intervene. And perhaps it is a bit suspicious when you say you, by large, you yourself tabulated to us all the departments you are involved in. You tabulated almost all the departments of government. How dare then do you think that should be left to market forces? I think you have got to look seriously into that. Because this is not pure business that can be left in even business itself. When it comes to a push, government has to intervene. And that's where the voters perhaps see the role of government and not only be left to the market forces. Let me just leave it there, Chair, and I'll come back again. Thanks. Honorable Khadabet.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'll start that I come from the background of the township, where generally the schools are in a poor state, whereby this government is doing all it can do to improve the situation, because we are coming from a particular past, né, where those schools were neglected. So once you come
from such a background, it means that there must be some sort of a targeted force which must be unleashed to go and undo that damage. And then at the same time, you still have the communities where were previously advantaged, whereby they were even able to hire the best teachers, even from the governing body's funds, they're able to get the best. And then you take these people who are coming from the historical advantaged background, take these people from the historical disadvantaged background, you want them to compete at the same level. Because the market force will just put them at the same level. And then are we going to be able to address, to redress the past? I think that's the question the engineering council must answer. And then, at the same time again, you come with the issue of the...
Sorry? Blanche, address me.
Blanche, I want to ask a question. What's this got to do with the boat?
Addresses me if you've got a question to raise. You know, you are the only member who believes that you need exemption in terms of conduct. I'm used to it by now. You believe you deserve a special dispensation in terms of your conduct, and you expect me to call you honorable member. I think you must respect the rules of parliament. I in a very strange way, indeed. You may continue.
All right, thank you, Chairperson. I'm referring to the presentation which is in front of me here, which the presenter has given me. I don't think that I've got the right to interfere with that. And then... when you go back to the, as I said that, the engineering council, that is the professional regulation, must not interfere with the market forces. I said precisely that will never be able to address the past injustices which are there in the profession. And then if we leave it to the market forces, let's look at the representation within this room here, inside this room. The constitution of the country provides for equality. Let us be fair. Let's look on the other side. Are there any women there? Are there any people with disability on the other side? The answer is no. They are not there. So, because the market forces will ensure that they are marginalized. So, what it means here, it means that what I wanted to allude to is that we do need, as parliament, we need to come with the laws which are going to ensure that we reshape the country. Because it cannot be business as usual. It cannot be South Africa of 2008. It cannot be the same as South Africa of 1948. There must be a radical differences there. So the issue of the market forces, really, I appreciate it if it can be unpacked. Because even the chairperson of the engineering council, he said that he was the first to be registered, the black registered engineer, because he had a sympathetic mentor. That's from the horse mouth, from the sympathetic mentor. Really, we cannot put the future of our children to sympathetic mentors. We cannot do that. I think that we must come with the structures which are going to ensure that all the children of South Africa get equal chance. Do it up or not. Someone must gain the profession because someone is sympathetic. No, cannot work like that. I think the engineering council has, the premise from which they are moving is very wrong. I think that they must address us because really it's a cause for concern. Why I say it's a cause for concern? Because myself, in 1985, I did apply. I wanted to do aerotronical engineering. Aerotronical engineering were five. I was the only black one. I got the highest scores in mathematics and science. But my, South African Transport Services then could not accommodate me. That's why I had to go and become a teacher. But very fortunate, I produced 16 engineers in the process because I was angry. So we cannot put the fate of our children like that. I think that something drastic must be done. Corrective measures must be done. And then you go to the issue of the blockages. I like that problem of the blockages. Yes, the registration only comes towards the end. Training and experience, education, engineering, higher education, whatever. But I think that as we're speaking now, it is the engineering council which also put the standards at the university level. The entrance is the interact with the higher education committee. To set the standard so that the professions, whoever comes out of that base, must have an acceptable knowledge. But today it comes here and say that they're only interested, they only come during the end part. I think that it will be wrong. That's why then we need a regulatory regime, which is going to reverse that. Because really, if you want to produce engineers, we cannot only look at towards the end. Even we must start at the high school level. That's where we must start. So that's why in the councils, we must have the people who belong to the community, who are not necessarily professionals. We must have the science and mathematics teachers who are coming from the high schools who must come to the council, so that they can advise you on time what is happening down there. So that's why now, with this body, with this issue of governance model are coming with 60-40, he said it's not all right. But I think that as the people are coming from the disadvantaged community, we say those people must be involved at that level. Because if you are there in these ivory towers, at the higher institutions, at the engineering council building, why do I understand what's happening at a women's high school at Friday? Do I understand what is happening? What's creating all this location? Yeah. And then the last one will be the issue of this thing. All right, the issue of confiscating the assets which were acquired by the registrants. Can we get a difference between a voluntary association and a statutory body? Because the CPE, the various councils which we are having, are statutory bodies. So once it becomes a statutory body, it means that there's a law which is governing that. It does not belong to any individual, unlike a voluntary association. When you speak about the voluntary association, people, like-minded minds, they come together, they form an association, they put their assets there. But here we're speaking about a statutory body, which is in existence because of the law of the country. So how can someone now claim private ownership of that? Can they expatiate further? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sydney.
Chair, I think the Honorable Khadebe is one of a special kind, producing 16 engineers. It's wonderful, bro. I think you are the solution to our problem.
He said that it was people who became engineers.
Yes, that I'm saying. He laid the foundation.
I think a teacher also under
them. I was also a teacher for 30 years. So, Chairperson, I think we need to really look into the whole issue of the foundational problems that we have. I just want to check with the engineers. I think we are moving in the education system from higher grade mathematics. It has been removed. How will this influence producing engineers in the future? And in your slide number 16, you refer to standards of competency for registration. Isn't that the problem, the gatekeeping that someone was referring to yesterday? And how is it possible that if you are signatory to international agreements, that in America people after 2 years just can receive their registration, and in South Africa you must go through a specific process? I would like you to respond to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like some clarity on some of the issues that were raised by EXA. For instance, made mention of the voluntary registration that has reached the number of 29,348 professions. And out of those, there are 56% of new registrations of previously disadvantaged persons. I would like the figure on that one. And it has come out very clear that you had unreasonable time frames for consultation. Maybe the department could assist us on that. And another question is about the concern that was raised by EXA in the about they said the enactment of the bill will result in a change of EXA's legal status. Maybe if you could give us a clarity on that. Could result in the cancellation of the international recognition of the registration of the 29,000 professionals. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Matuba, you will come back again. I think I will give Honorable Member an opportunity to raise questions again. I'm going to make some few comments and speak to other issues. First, I need an undertaking did you speak to engineering youth? Because I also want to base my comments on the their article.
Yes, Madam Chair, I did speak to Engineering News. I've looked at it again, and I just want to say that, you know, journalists have this creative license as well, and that otherwise the article is factually correct in terms of representing the views of the council, and that... The important gist of it is...
No, I just wanted to know whether did you speak to them, because they also have a video clip, you see.
Yes, I know that.
Yes, but it's okay. I just wanted to know that. I want to make my comment. First, I want to start with honorable members. Is the microphone off? Okay. Honorable members, I should make an observation that in your questions, you focused more on issues of gaps in the education sector in terms of the production of people who will qualify at some point to be engineers. I thought maybe the majority of your questions would look at the registration process, because this professional council deals more with registration as opposed to preparing candidates.
Because I believe that's a very serious question. We are dealing with the outcomes.
Honorable member, I always say...
And we are complaining about the outcomes.
Honorable member, if you have a different view on what I said, I think you shouldn't be agitated. You can just note it and then we come back to it. Look at their slide. We just showed you the slide. You see? I don't necessarily agree with this slide. That's why I made my comments. But you focus more on those blockages that they say are there. I will make my comment when I come to it. Yeah, no, but I'm saying, honorable members, you see, wait. I will give you a chance to raise your views again, including differing with me. You can. You should, actually, if you feel that you need to have a different view altogether. But give me a chance to speak. Note what you want to differ me with, then you come back. This document of CBE, it was produced on the 8th of June 2007. It says the role of the built environment professions in meeting South Africa's socio-economic development needs. I really like this document. Mr. Zulu, I'm impressed by this document, because what this document tries to do, it navigates on challenges in the built environment. It also talks to the structure of the construction industry itself. It goes to look at the gross fixed capital formation in relation to the economic growth. It went further on to raise many other issues. But there are specific pages that captured my imagination, which I believe I should refer to when it relates to challenges that has been identified by the Joint Initiative and Priority Skills Acquisition, which we refer in short as CHIPSA, as part of the targets of the ASCISA. It says, I'm not going to mention all the challenges, but I'm going to highlight a few. One of the challenges that has been said is that there's a shortage of suitable skilled labor and the special distortions of apartheid affecting low-skilled labor costs. It says that there's also a barrier to entry, limits to competition, and the limited new investment opportunities. So it's quite a very critical analogy. If there's barrier to entry, then we say, what then is that barrier to entry? Now, because I'm trying to make sense of this, and then I look at your presentation, if you say that you have registered 56% of the previously disadvantaged, it means you are saying that there's no barrier to entry. It means you are negating this fact. Honorable members were requesting figures, but to me it's very ironical say that you have 56%, but in your slide you give us this slide. This slide says that problems, access to profession. You say that there is the school's education system that is bad, it doesn't produce enough people to be in the engineering sector, but you say that you've got 56. Where are they coming from? Where does that 56% come from? If the education system did not produce those people, where is this half of the percent of the 100% coming from? And it propels me to stand demand the actual template that shows people who come from the previously disadvantaged, that 56% out of the 100% of your 27,000 or 29,000 membership, it means you therefore say 14,000 are from the previously disadvantaged. Then we need to see, because 50%, 56% of the current registered members, it means it's half of what you have in your membership. Because if you say you've got 29,000 membership and we have 56% registered, you actually say that you've got half of that amount. That's you, that's not me, it's in your slides. You'll come to that point. You'll come to that point. I'm talking about this. This slide says we don't get professionals, we don't get people who are prepared to come to us. We'll come to that point. It's one point that I wanted to raise. I need somebody to clarify you on this one. Now, the article, Professor Bavayaga says that ICSA agrees with the principles of the
legislation. Madam Chair, on point of order, could I ask you that we have a copy, that we get a copy of the article? All of us
should be the
senior, we don't
have. Honorable Sydney, you've got a copy in front of you.
Are you talking about the one in Engineering News?
Yes. Maybe you should listen carefully so that you understand what I'm
trying to, ma'am.
Yeah, but you always have difficulty of listening. You see, that's the problem. You always have a problem of listening. Only you.
Person, is it fair that you discuss issues that were not discussed here, and we are not allowed to do that?
Which issues?
The article that you are discussing, madam. We were discussing the submission, and you refused us to make inputs there. Now you are discussing an article.
Which submissions did I refuse to make inputs on? No, Honorable Blanche, I'm not talking to you. Honorable Opperman, which
I referred to that the what was that thing now on the board? I make comments on 21 that slide 21. I ask questions about that, and you said it is not. I cannot do it.
I did not say you can't, and you are not the only person who spoke on educational issues, Honorable Khadebe. The majority of the things that he spoke about related to education, I'm saying, I thought you would also talk to registration. I did not say you cannot. We should not phrase issues to suggest something else. And I'm going to make a special request for honorable members to listen. Because if we've got fixation, we won't be able to listen to one another. We'll pass each other. Please, listen carefully when a person speaks. I said you only related to issues of education. You did not speak about registration. Of which they are not responsible for producing people at a higher education level. They deal with the registration of members, unless it is not a fact. And if what I'm saying irritates people, it's unfortunate, but I need to make my inputs, and I need to make my comments. You can differ with me, raise your hand, you'll be noted, you'll do that. But the type of irritation that I receive is not acceptable, honorable members. No one did that when we were speaking here. And I think we should respect each other's views. I did ask whether this article was written. I have not yet referred to it. Honorable Spies, I'm making my inputs. You'll get a chance. I have noted Honorable Maduma. I have noted you. You'll get a chance. In the article, if I can refer to it, ICSA says that it does not have a problem the objectives of the department to accelerate transformation and increase skills transfer? But in the same article, it is said that the policy framework that the department has put across is based on assumptions and generalization. So, Professor, I don't know whether is that what you said or it's just what the journalist has put there as his own views, because what I would have wanted to understand from you is that at a point where you decide that the department has generalized, I think that you've got specific proposals. And today I will want to listen to specific proposals that have been made, because what has been presented today are not specific proposals. Because the document that we have been taking through now suggests that we should actually leave the processes to the market force. Page 9, principles of management in that policy. Mr. Goba said that this policy position is still relevant. And part of what is said there, it says professional regulation should not interfere with market forces. It's not me, it's your document. You will provide a point of information when I finish. Just note it. An issue that you can take. Now, Mr. Goba says that this bill has got negative effects. Now, I will want to know what are those negative effects. Because he said that people are not ready to relate to this. That's what you said. And on issues of consultation, I think there's always confusion about the role of the government departments and the role of the legislature. For instance, in this particular case, we as a portfolio committee, at some point in one meeting, and yesterday I was referring to that meeting, at which point we said and decided that we need to close legislation gaps. We therefore requested the department to draft a piece of legislation to address certain gaps that were identified, which are enlisted even in the background of this bill. And I even indicated yesterday that a member of the executive will only present a draft legislation because he or she is a member of parliament. So whether the department consult or not in the process, the only organization that cannot escape consultation is parliament. That's why we've got public hearings. If they do consult on policy imperatives, it's an add-on in actual fact. When a bill is introduced before parliament, we will call for submissions. We'll call for public opinion, we'll call for sectoral opinions on that, we'll allow people to make both written and oral presentations, and we'll consider all of them. We don't only consider those who are here who make presentations, we also consider those who cannot make it because we can't have everybody here. Because there's financial implications to that, but we consider each and every view that comes to us. Therefore, whether the department has not consulted or not, we are supposed to consult, and we did that. And you can't tell me, really, honorable members, that 3 weeks is not enough for a person to comment on a piece of legislation. Can't be. So we can't say we're not ready, we need more time. I don't agree with that. There's an issue about there will be law registration if this bill goes in the format it is. But currently we said we have registered 56. Why do we predict that there will be no registration later? I don't understand. I think I need more clarity there. In the same document, issue of funding is raised, and I think the issue of funding has long been addressed. I mean, some officials of ICSA were here yesterday. We got a presentation, but we can still get that presentation even today to speak on issues of funding models. Because here there's a suggestion that the National Treasury must fund that. And I think I need to make this comment, Mr. Koba. Until we get information that proves how many black engineers we have produced in this country, if we happen to be fortunate enough to be recognized, we should not give an impression here that everybody is recognized. It would be very bad. It is actually in bad spirit if we can sit here and give an impression that there is a lot of black engineers that has been trained or that have been registered, because it's not a true reflection of what your organization stands for in the current juncture. Until we get those figures and we see them, I don't think it's true. And Honorable Spears makes an example about unions. You know, it's a very bad example. Unions are not decided by government. Government does not sit and say, today we are going to establish COSATU. But in relation to this council, we did that through an act of parliament. So it's a very, very bad example. Really, I think you must familiarize yourself with what this committee is doing, because you are not a member. But we will not kill you for that, for not understanding what is happening here. So, unless if you understand the difference between unions and councils that has been established through a regulation, because government doesn't regulate the lives of unions. It can't. Workers will kill us if you can try to do that. Well, I must be careful of the word kill.
Trade unions are registered in terms of the Labor Relations Act.
Yeah, they
can be deregistered.
Yeah, but that's registration. You see, you're talking about registration, not establishment. So there's a difference between the two words. Well, English is not my mother tongue, but I think I understand the difference between registration and regulation.
That person, I hope your reference to the word
I know,
is not
that
a
every
joke.
Time I speak,
it's not a joke.
Sorry?
It's not a joke.
What is not a joke?
Your reference to the word kill.
Yeah, I said I must be careful.
Yeah, very careful.
I did say I must be careful about kill. But I'm also impressed by how people are agitated today, and you know, they look of the same complexion, but it's okay. May we take responses, then we'll come back for questions.
Madam Chair, I have a number of colleagues who will help me to respond to some of the questions. Some of the questions come from my own presentation. My presentation in some cases has had some intended consequences, that in the sense that I may have been misunderstood. We cannot ignore our achievements since 1994. So 56% is positive for us, and we are proud of it. It should be 80%, should be more. We are proud of it. But on the other hand, 56% of what? The numbers are still low. And what we've tried today is to describe what is not easy to describe, but to describe the entire pipeline. How do we get to have somebody registered as a professional engineer? That's what we've tried. That's why we've presented slide number 21. I don't want to get into personal things about myself. I don't like talking about myself. But what I wanted to indicate is that it's possible. It's possible, and we should not hide these things away from our own self. It's just a genuine interest for the honorable members that they should understand how we view our processes. Our processes are described on the website and so on, and we are available to be consulted on them and to contribute also even to the other councils. That's our role. We are appointed by the minister. We take our responsibilities seriously, and we would like to do this. However, if we are excluded, we won't have an opportunity to do that. Madam Chair, I will ask the CEO to respond to the first question that was asked about where foreigners come from.
Madam Chair, thank you. The 5,000 foreign nationals that are on our register are primarily from the SADC region. They are black professionals from the SADC region. And if I can just say very quickly.
And not Cubans, not double black, Chair.
Not yet, Madam Chair, because we are busy with that process.
No, I'm just pulling you slacky. He knows why I'm saying that.
But, Madam Chair, what is interesting is that, just to say quickly, and others will answer in detail, that South Africa is the only country on the continent that is a signatory to all of these accords. And what ECSA and the country has done is to make amendments to the rules of these international accords to allow these foreign nationals who do not have accrediting quality assurance bodies in their own countries to register with ECSA and through ECSA get foreign accreditation and recognition, which I think was a major milestone for the continent in terms of the engineering profession. But Professor Hanrahan will respond in detail.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think if we go back to the question of the 56%, it's actually 56% of a number which is very close to 7,000. We had 7,000 new registrants over the past 3 years. That's what we're talking about here. And almost 4,000 of those were previously disadvantaged people. So while our president said it's a small number, it is a small number in relation to what the country needs, but it's actually a large number of people. So it certainly is contributing to the skills development. And then, Madam Chair, you referred to a possible contradiction between this information and the pipeline, I believe, where if I could just give you a feel for what is happening. So if you look at the point of registration, there are 29,000 people that have achieved that, which means some of them are quite old, like myself. Some of them are graduated in the last 3 to 6 years. And if we then look at engineering higher education, we graduate relatively small numbers of Bachelor of Engineering, National Diploma, and Bachelor of Technology. And that if you then trace that back to the schools, and what you find is that we effectively have about 40,000 people who've written, well, matric in the past, national senior certificate from now on, who wrote higher grade mathematics. And of those, about 26,000 passed, and I'm using 2006 figures. Of those, about 10,000 had adequate symbols to go into these relevant programs. And engineering is then competing with science, the hard sciences, with medicine, with accountancy. So we as a country are producing about 10,000 matriculants who are really qualified to, or are ready for programs in these into higher education. If you then look back, and we referred to a report produced by the Council for Higher Education, which analyzed this problem in detail, that if you look at the participation rates in higher education for the different racial groups, whites and Indians, the participation rate is about 60% of the age group 19 to 24. For coloureds, it's lower, and for black students, it's 20%, which is a third of what it is for white students. And that then relates very strongly to the dysfunctional schools, which are the former DET schools, by and large, which haven't in fact improved sufficiently. So the real blockage is the low participation rate of black school kids going into higher education adequately prepared for the professions that have demanding entry requirements.
Yeah, but that's but one factor.
Yeah.
Because you see, we at some point we were sitting in one meeting and we established the fact that registration is a hiccup. For the fact that you use voluntary associations who are not necessarily permanently employed by ICSA, who can come as and when they are free, it was discussed in the portfolio committee. It was in a meeting of this portfolio committee when we were asking, but how is the registration process taken? Because, yes, it is indeed a low level of black students, but there is also a problem with registration. And it's one thing, and we have not yet discussed the bill. We are still discussing something else. We still need to discuss this bill. Where do we differ with the contents of the bill? We have not yet heard anybody saying that we differ with this particular sections of the bill as it stands. We still need to come to that. But I'm saying it was in this portfolio committee meeting, listening to people, including one of the members asking a question, how do you deal with the registration? And we were told that is done by voluntary association members and their own free will when they are free. We realize that in terms of your administration, people who are doing registration are at a very lower rank. It was said in the meeting. And we have heard one person who said, but I'm so overqualified, I can't get through to registration. Maybe we'll hear some even saying that today. It's something even beyond this point that we need to test, honorable members. We will need to test. We will need to undergo an intensive investigation about the processes, because I have taken it upon my shoulders that I am going to look at all universities, how many people graduate and what. We are still even waiting for correspondence from some of the universities, because that's what is required, to look at those people who graduate and interview them, do some research work, have this committee or prepare to spend money to check whether are we indeed at some point not dealing with this issue correctly. Because it was set in the meeting. You were there, Professor, when we were asking how do you deal with the registration, at which level. And we were told that it's voluntary association members when they are free. They're not paid. That's what it was said in the meeting. But we'll come to that. But this is, we're not ignoring that fact. Honorable members have admitted it, that indeed. And it's something that we'll look at from a different level. That's why I said this document, it's time to speak about training of those engineers, 1,000 of them a year. We'll look at whether the Department of Education is adhering to the GIPSA principles in terms of what we want to achieve. But it's a different issue altogether. But I just wanted to highlight this one.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think that what if I'm to sum up the question of the number of previously disadvantaged people attaining registration now, which was 4,000 over 3 years, the
meaning that is about 1,800 a year.
No, 1,300.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I must point out that it's increasing every year. So the trend is in the right direction. But if we look back into the pipeline and we say, what are the prospects of increasing that 10 times? We see serious blockages in the higher education system and serious blockages in the school system. And I think ECSA works very, very closely with GIPSA. We're involved in the the BEng increased output program. We're involved in the technician and technologist program, and we've now commented on a report on academic vacancies. So X is very, very involved in trying to help those that can unblock the pipeline, unblock it.
My secretary is harassing me that there is coffee and we need to take a break, but let's sum up because you say that it's getting cold and all that. So
Madam Chair, I think that's probably all that I would say on that item. Would you like me to address the question of the volunteers, which you've just raised? The use of volunteers, that is, people who are not employed for the purpose, in order to perform functions such as looking at the actual professional aspects of applications for registration. We have people who handle administrative aspects and who, in fact, serve on teams that go to universities to evaluate programs for accreditation. The reason for using volunteers is because of the principle of peer judgment. The people that actually do the evaluation must have the expertise. And ECSA and all the bodies that it compares itself with around the world and benchmarks itself with use already registered people to in fact do this evaluation. So we don't use volunteers because we're poor or because we're inefficient. We use volunteers because we are applying the principle of peer judgment. So people in the discipline who are already registered, who understand about the requirements for registration, understand the standards that apply, people who understand the requirements for accreditation of programs. So simply put, the reason for using volunteers is to implement the principle of peer judgment. And ECSA also works according to a time schedule. There are meetings scheduled throughout the year, and the rate at which an application progresses is determined by those milestones, like any other democratic process. And applications get held up if they're incomplete. Often people submit applications that are incomplete. We've got to go back to them and say, would you please supply this additional information? So, given
it's not a systemic problem that people have been raising because they've been having complaints about systemic problems.
I'm not perhaps speaking for the chief executive. We continue to work on these problems as they arise. But you know, if I could stress the reason.
So then we'll have to look at the number of complaints that relates to that, and then we can speak on that one. I think we should. The legal matters where there's litigation process that is taking. Because it can't talk to whether it is a systemic problem or not. Mm-hmm. Well, you said the CEO must speak, I don't know, because we can equally ask how many legal issues are in front of in terms of people who believe that they're not registered when they qualify, but we'll look at that later.
Madam Chair, I think we must draw a distinction between complaints against registered people who people out there think have been behaving unprofessionally, and we have a large number of those. But ECSA has an appeals process for people who are aggrieved by the registration process, or academic institutions who are aggrieved by accreditation decisions. And in fact, one step of that appeal process is that if all remedies within ECSA are exhausted, the next step is the CBE. And a number of cases have, in fact, gone that route, and they've, by and large, they've been resolved.
Let's break for tea. We'll then come back.
What it says is that professional regulation should not unnecessarily interfere with the commercial aspects of professional practice. So it should not provide for things like price fixing, the creation of monopolies, making professions exclusive, and so on. And those were the evils that it was trying to guard against. And it went on to, in fact, say that when writing legislation to protect the public interest, this should, in fact, concentrate on the regulation of professional conduct, not on the commercial aspects of practice, unless, of course, somebody is doing something unprofessional of a commercial nature. And it said that cognizance must be taken of any legislation relating to the promotion of competition, and that is why we have the requirement in the various bills that the identification of work for the various councils must, in fact, be referred to the Competition Commission by the CBE as part of the process. I hope that explanation of the competition aspects is of help to members.
Actually, it provokes further discussions, because if you can look at the role of a developmental state, it does make certain interventions in the market. If you look at our economic policy as it stands, so that statement provokes a bigger discussion, but I don't want us to get into it because it's going to derail us from what we're about to achieve today. But what you're saying, actually, I don't think any parliamentarian sitting here, maybe some, but if you look at the role of the developmental state, you're actually saying it must play a very limited role, except to regulate conduct. You cannot only regulate conduct, but at some point you need to make interventions in the market, because as the market stands, it's not fair competition. You cannot say there's fair competition when everything is not equal. We can't speak as if there's equilibrium in the market. It's not. There are those who had been in the market for some time. There are those who are at entry level. And how do you regulate in such a way that those who are at an entry level get equal opportunities? Because of the uniqueness of the challenges we had because of apartheid, you need to have some form of regulation to allow that. But I don't want us to discuss that today, because this meeting is not about that. But that's basically what honourable members are engaged in, because you actually question the economic policy of a developmental state and the nature of its own interventions in the market. I'm saying that's not the issue for discussion for today, because if you can discuss that, you're going to waste much more time on the issue of the market economy, whereas it's, because I think we still need to come back to what are the issues in the bill that we think we differ. We have not yet even spoke about that. We spoke about the registration process and the hiccups in the education system. We have not spoke to the bill itself, that which part of the bill do we believe is not relevant. Then why should we keep the current act as it stands? We have not yet come to that point. So let's sum up so that we can take follow-up questions from honourable members, and then, because I think there's a question that's not been answered by honourable Maduma. It's not yet answered. I don't know whether honourable members, all your questions have been answered, but we need to wrap up in terms of answering the questions and get more questions so that we can finish this presentation. Let's sum up.
Madam Chair, I think we could probably use 22 to pick up on your point of what are the major shortcomings of the bill, and I believe that we'll then pick up on quite a number of the other questions that have been raised. We argue that the composition of the council and possibly of the board, because the bill is a bit ambiguous as to what how the boards could in fact work out. This is definitely a threat to peer judgment, and And that would, in fact, compromise the accreditation processes, the registration processes, and could, in fact, impact on the international recognition of this new structure.
But how? If we can get the how part of it, that's a generic statement. How do we believe it's going to this the composition of the board is going to be a threat?
Well, the board composition formula puts a maximum on the professional peers, and it puts a minimum on the community representatives, and it leaves it to the minister to decide on the actual composition. Now, we argued elsewhere in this presentation that those boards need something like a 60% peers, 40% community representative. Following the argument...
But you've not answered the why question. Why do we believe it's a threat? And why do we believe it's appointed by the minister? We need the answer to the why question, not the comment.
Well, it's appointed by the minister because the bill says the minister will make this regulation, which decides on the composition of the board.
So why do we believe it's a threat?
Why we believe that it's a threat? If we end up with a board which it does not have enough peer expertise on it to make the right judgments on standards, accreditation of programs, registration of people, those core functions in List A, we could actually end up not protecting the public.
But how do we know? You see, I'm having a problem here because to me it's not the number of people who sit in a meeting. It's about the substantive issues they raise. So whether there's only two people against 20 others, if they are raising because we are preempting that there will be a bunch of fools who doesn't understand a word about what is happening against two clever intellectuals who knows about this profession and who will be clouded by 20 fools who will not understand the language they speak, and therefore automatically they will never make any sense. And that is what presuming, and I don't know whether we enact on the basis of presumptions or on the basis of facts, because we still don't understand what. Are we also suggesting that the minister will not act in the best interest of the engineering councils? That what was saying here, because we have not yet had fundamental. You see, we're a very big meeting. I will not take people on the basis of numbers. I will take people on the basis of the issues they raise and how relevant they are to what we're talking about. So how does the numbers affect peer judgment? How? If I can be told that. Then if you can just clear that one, which is difficult because people go around the cycles every time we ask that question. They don't tell us how it will affect it. Even yesterday, the Chamber of Mines could not tell us how will numbers affect.
Madam Chair, let's take a hypothetical board with a certain number of peers and a certain number of community representatives. The 1999 policy document was very clear that the peers were there because of the expert judgment that needs to be brought to bear on decisions. For example, if a new standards document is in fact being produced, the peers will in fact know whether it meets the requirements for the profession. The 1999 policy document is clear that the community representatives are there to, as it were, keep the peers honest and to keep the focus on the community interest. Because as community representatives, they don't have the expert knowledge in the field. They know what the impacts of engineering are on.
Exactly the point I was saying, which is irrelevant. Let's get the department to clarify, because there's misinterpretation on the roles, and we call them community representatives. I don't think they are. They are council members. When they are appointed, they're not representing communities. So let's get Jessica and everybody to clear this air, because if this is how this is perceived, it's a problem. Can we get somebody, Gavin or Jessica, can somebody clear this air, please?
Can we get our legal drafter to clear that for us?
Yes.
Thank you, honorable members.
I think you have quite rightly pointed out that there is presumption as regards composition. As presently structured, the bill envisages certain of the core regulatory functions, as they call them, the A ones, being undertaken at professional board level. At that level, the requirement is the minister will prescribe composition, subject thereto that there is at least 20% representation of non-registered persons. Now, the council itself, SACBE, has representation by way of at least six professionals sitting on that particular council. Now, if you take all the core issues which may impact on standing insofar as international accords are concerned, by way of an example, education and training, what are those minimum competencies to be prescribed by the minister? The process would typically be council will consult professional boards, and that brings professional expertise to bear upon that process. Council is then consulted by the minister in prescribing regulations, and there again, there is peer review present to give input on matters relating to the professions, and the minister eventually promulgates. And the minister's role in that process is simply this, to make sure that national policy is borne about in the eventual regulations that are promulgated. Now, that's how the structure would work. And as you rightfully pointed out, there is an assumption that the composition of those particular bodies would be, insofar as this community representation, there would be people who would be unable to make a significant contribution to those particular, and to bear upon public policy issues on matters which affect the professions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And further to add on that, that's why this committee requested to have a document that's going to prescribe transitional arrangements, because it's going to influence how policy is implemented in that regard. And we're playing an oversight responsibility. So I don't know why do we think that this does not suffice, because if we believe that those boards and councils does not adhere to basic international standards, then we as MPs will have faltered our responsibility. So I really don't understand. Maybe let's hear a different reason altogether, because this one does not hold.
Madam Chair, the composition and functions of council and the composition and functions of the board do not make it absolutely clear that all of the functions on List A are the sole preserve of the board. In fact, we on page 11 at the very bottom in the bill, we have the power for the council to determine whether a matter falls entirely within the ambit of a professional board or not. So
which page? Where?
Page 11 of the bill.
Where?
3B at the bottom. So we do not believe that the bill is unambiguously worded in a way that clearly demarcates the functions of the council and the functions of the board. And it could, in fact, end up with a situation with the board, with a council overriding the board on a matter which is, in fact, on our List A, i.e. the core regulatory functions.
But you did not either suggest a new formulation in relation to that, did you?
Madam Chair, we Advocate Henning Viljoen has produced a clause-by-clause analysis which has, in fact, been submitted.
But I want us to speak to that. We want you to speak to a suggestion in terms of formulation if you believe that this is ambiguous.
One of our proposals is, in fact, to remove 3B, yeah?
Take us slow, because we need to, my secretary needs to note that.
So it's clause 16.3b. The details are in Advocate Fulhune's proposal, but the substance of it is that 3b creates a potential governance problem, where a body which is doesn't have the competence to judge a professional matter could end up judging a professional matter.
Yeah, but what's the formulation? That's what I'm asking.
Delete.
No, but delete and then insert what?
Nothing.
Yeah. No, well, I don't think that's taking us anywhere. You don't augment what you said it's ambiguous, but how do you reformulate it? Because if it's just deleting, I don't think it's taking us anywhere. Well, there's two views. I don't know what that's supposed to mean.
No, it's, we're both saying 3A remains, 3B goes. So the A then is unnecessary.
But what is wrong if a council determine whether a matter that it falls entirely within the ambit of a professional board or not? Because that's what B is saying. What is wrong if the council determines whether this matter must be?
Madam Chair, the ambiguity as we see it, and perhaps advocate for
but as the ambiguity, we needed to clarify. We needed to reformulate if there is ambiguity, where, because we still need to know where is the ambiguity. Because our question was never answered, whether how do you justify the fact that if the council members who comprise of community members are part of the board will influence how that board thinks. We were not given a straightforward answer.
Madam, if I may answer that question, we say that subsection 3B is a recipe for conflict between the council and the particular board.
Yeah, but the question we asked is how, and it's not is the one that is not answered. We've heard that, but how?
If it affects a core, what we say is a core function, and the board regards it as part of peer judgment function, but council decides that it rather that council has the full authority over that function. Then there can be an impasse between the council and the board.
We're discussing assumptions. It's not there. That board, we don't even know who they are. We're already assuming that this is what they're going to do. How do we address that issue through legislation? Assumptions. How do we deal with assumptions through legislation?
Yes, well, one
because there's assumption that it, they might, and who, yes. I mean, really, what are we discussing on top of the
When we are discussing legislation is something that applies in future. Not one of us know what the future will be. So we have to make certain assumptions or case studies or whatever you will call it, or suspicions, but one has to try and think into the future and have a perspective on a possible problem. And we see a possible problem of conflict between the council and a board on what is a core function and whether professionals should decide on that function or community representatives.
Well noted. Honorable Maduma, is it a follow-up on what
you said? Chairperson, we need to be assisted by EXA as to whether you have got peer review that is executed by yourself or by the voluntary association. And if so, if by the voluntary association, to what effect are they biased to the call of you as an association or having to advance the personal interest in terms of executing the IGPs in relation to your decision, for instance? Because one of the matter is that of having this unknown fear in terms of these boards, because we have got this controlling power in terms of the registration process. Perhaps you need to assist us in that regard. I've got other questions, but I'm just making this intervention.
No, we'll come to the other question. I'm saying that we should know this issue because we don't get the necessary answer. We should legislate on the basis of an assumption that community members might.
Madam Chair, maybe I could assist here. It's a very simple issue. Whatever the legislation brings out, as soon as a situation arises where peer judgment, in other words, the profession judging its own, is threatened. In other words, where the board is made up, or if the board doesn't have the full power to take the decision to do with a professional matter, and the council can overrule it, and that council is made up of where peers are in the minority, internationally, what happens then is that if peers are not in the majority making a judgment on a peer issue that's to do with the profession, whether it's somebody to be registered, whether it's a program to be accredited, whether it's somebody to be disciplined, as soon as that is threatened, then and the profession is not in control of its professionals in the country, then what happens is internationally, despite what the legal opinion is from the Department of Public Works, I'm telling you this as a member of one of the six people in the world who govern those six agreements that are sitting up on the board. Three registers, the APEC register for the APEC Economic Community, the EMF International one, and the Technologist International one. The three accords that deal with accreditation of programs for engineers, technologists, and technicians internationally. If we do not have peer judgment judging the issues to do with the profession that are in the majority in those boards for the decision-making process, we are thrown out of the international community. Simple as that. There's no argument about being debatable.
On the same point, it's not an issue whether we don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But we're saying, are you suggesting that this government will operate outside international standards? Because that's what you're saying. If a board decides on the basis of numbers, or a council decides on the basis of numbers, not standards, then there's a problem. Because to me, it's not about numbers. It's about standards.
Exactly.
How do you justify that standards will only be reduced on the basis of numbers? It can't be.
No,
because any board is governed by certain principles. And that board, irrespective of how many people sit in it, will have to adhere to standards.
Madam Chair, those standards are set by the professionals, by the peers. And it's those standards that we stick to, set by our peers, applied by
our peers.
But they're
there. They will be sitting in the boards.
Yes.
They will be sitting in the council.
That is what gives us international recognition. Number one, because the peers are in the system and in majority. Number two, because the standards that we
it's
stick
not about
to
the numbers,
meet those
sir.
International.
It's not about the numbers. For the fact that there is peers who sit there, professionals, who sits there, whether there are two or there are three, and there are clear standards that have been set, I believe an issue of numbers does not hold. Because even if the majority of people are not professionals, they are subjected to those norms and standards. They can't underestimate what government...
It doesn't work like that, Madam Chair.
No,
I've just
it will have to, in this case, yeah. That's what we're trying to achieve.
Well,
we want it to be like that.
I can just give you an example. Chinese Taipei applied for provisional membership of the Engineers Mobility Forum. I was at meetings in Singapore of all this international alliance, which all these agreements are part of, and the one thing that all the signatory countries insisted on, now I'm talking about, and people may not be aware of who they all are, there's from the East, there's Japan, Malaysia, Korea, Singapore, Hong Kong, China, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa is the only African country, the UK, Ireland, the States, Canada, and there Russia's sitting in the wings, Germany's sitting in the wings, waiting to come in, but they don't meet the standards at this point in time because the education systems are slightly different and they've got to change them. But essentially, what everybody said, all of those signatory countries said, that if Chinese Taipei's system that registers their people on this international register does not have peers in the majority, because in many of the eastern countries there are government officials on their registration boards. but they have to be peers. And if the peers do not hold the majority in the committee, then it was a simple issue. Chinese Taipei would not have been admitted. Simple as that.
No, we'll note it. We'll do the rest of our consultation. That's what I said. We'll not want to shift it out. We'll do the necessary check and balances. It's an issue that we need to take into consideration. That's what I said. I don't think we should entertain further discussions on this matter because we are looking for further research. When we debate it amongst ourselves as members, we'll look into this issue. So honourable members noted the suggestion of ICSA. Any other matter we need? Yes. Let's wrap up in terms of the answer so that we can give members a chance.
Madam Chair, may I answer Honourable Maduma's question briefly? The role of the voluntary associations is as a reservoir of people with expertise. They have these large memberships, and they can identify people. So their main role is to identify experts who then come and serve on ICSA panels and ICSA committees. And having been identified by the voluntary association and having been accepted by ICSA, they then operate in their own right. And hopefully they leave their biases behind.
Let's not deal with that part.
But if the South African Institution of Civil Engineers, which is represented here, nominates civil engineering program reviewers to us in ICSA, we train them in the methods of accreditation, and they are then led. The teams are led by experienced people, who are there to, in fact, stamp on the biases if they appear. So we understand this problem, but we believe we have a handle on it.
Now we consider that, but we have a case of Mr. Raka. We see who. We don't know what is the problem to date, but it's nevertheless, we take it that we take due recognition of skills and all that. But we've got the case of Raka, who presented here yesterday, that after 10 years' experience and with all these qualifications, having worked in big projects of Bell South in America, he can't be registered here. So we don't know what that's supposed to mean when we take into consideration what we've said here today. Let's take members' questions. We need to wrap up. We start, no, you were not the first honorable member. You know, I am very democratic. It was Honorable Opperman, Honorable Spies, Honorable Maduma, Honorable Ramotsamai. I don't know whether there's any other indication between Honorable Mengwan and Honorable Khadebe. Okay, in that order, Honorable Opperman. Honorable Blanchard, your three questions, are they still there? Please don't kill me again. Oh, kill, I must stop saying kill.
Madam Chair, we've given this group half an hour. We've now spent more than 3 hours on them. I would keep my questions and I'll ask them later myself, come back to the committee.
Later, Honourable Member. They won't get another chance to talk to you. You the one saying that you've given them more than the allocated
Madam
time.
Madam Chair, my question to them, are you providing for refrigeration, air conditioning engineers somewhere in the setup?
The answer to that is a quick yes. It's a sub-discipline of mechanical engineering.
And the other two questions, Honourable Member? I suggest... It's okay, Honourable Member. Honourable Member.
Chairperson, I did ask the question about gatekeeping. I did not have a response on that.
Okay. We'll take all of them. Honourable Spies.
Chair, I was actually covered by part of the discussion so far. So.
Thank you. Honourable Maduma.
Yeah, Chair. Thank you, Chair. On page 14, Chair, of their presentation, they talk about cross-subsidization of council from fee income is unacceptable. Now, my question is that do they think that it is fair for other councils, for instance, not to have infrastructure and run those councils from the briefcase? if they say that cross-subsidization is not acceptable. Because also the fees, the registration fee, that makes them to be viable or self-sufficient is also through the Act of Parliament, because they have established that fee through the Act of Parliament in terms of registration fee. And what makes them to be more different to other councils in terms of ensuring as a government that these councils are self-reliant?
Actually, to add on what you are saying, I used to work for the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism in the Free State. You know, through the game farms that the department had, they were collecting a lot of revenue. That never even came to the Free State coffers. It went to the National Revenue Fund to be utilized for the entire government program. Any money that is collected in the name of a regulation or any law of this country, it's not belonging to a specific institution. So in this case, it sounds very funny, because this is not a voluntary association membership fees. It's registration fees established through an Act of Parliament. So I'm interested to know how do we come to that conclusion. But let's take all the questions. Honorable Ramosaba.
Chair, I think that takes me to the issue in their presentation that talks about confiscation of assets, you know. I mean, that language alone is rather a bit malicious, because it means you are taking away something that belongs to us and in that. Chair, more than questions, I would just want to make some comments. I know that EXA is actually, broadly engineering, but I think they must remember that this bill is looking at all these disciplines, at actually not only engineering, but others as well. So it's actually, I know they're going to talk about their own. And I think we're trying to make even other professionals as important as engineering in this case. This is what this bill is beginning, to do properly. And the fact that even the structure that was governing these professions was with the present legislation is actually equalizing that. That alone is a problem, because it means they are unable to actually look broadly at all these professions, because they are actually being equated, equally. Therefore, engineering should be seen on the level of all other professions and not at the higher profession than others. I want to make just a comment, you know, about engineering in particular. I think our government has been promoting math and science. I'm going to come to education, unfortunately, math and science in our school, so that more of our young people get into these professions. But there's a perception, rightly or wrongly, that exists even amongst young people, that they now feel they don't want to do engineering because most engineering young people end up being secretaries or PA to people who are doing that. And I think what we're beginning to do, all of us as South Africans, are beginning to remove that, so that once they actually are professionals, they do what is supposed to be done. And therefore, if this has been continuing so far, and even the present regulation is not doing that correctly, then it relies upon us as politicians to correct that. And this is what we are beginning to do, that all of them, so that even you as engineers, and a profession is in engineers, begin to look into other professions as well, that actually should actually be promoted as well and actually regain the same standard, even increasing the numbers. You proudly have 29,000, others have got 7,012. How do we, as actually legislators, we need to begin to actually to increase those numbers, and all of us professors should be part of that. Therefore, the issue of representation of that, as you claim to have the majority, maybe tomorrow you may not be the majority. What are we going to say? You may be it now today. What is going to happen in 10 years down the line? Are we going to say the architects now should be the majority?
Especially when that club have increased its membership.
Yes. So therefore, let us not only look about today, as you are saying, because you claim that you've got 29,000. In 5 years' time, you might have other professions being the majority. Then they're going to come again and say that, let's look at this broadly and treat it actually as a profession in South Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Honourable members, honourable Khan.
All right, thank you, Comrade Chair. What I raised initially, which was not answered, was the issue of the confiscation of assets. That's what I raised. It didn't come as an answer before. But then I'll have to go back again to the figures, né, which were presented here. The figures which were presented were roughly around 7,000 over 3 years. I think that we're having a serious problem in South Africa. If over a period of 3 years we're going to have 7,000 new registrants in the profession. Why do I say that? Because if you can look at Germany itself now, annually they produce around 40,000 engineers. You go to India, it's around 300,000. Go to China, around 400,000 per annum. So it shows that there's something wrong. So what do they say? What must we do? Because I think that by Parliament passing bring this bill here, is try to undo some of the things which you think that are having this bottleneck here. So what do they suggest that we must do in order to overcome this thing? Because really, if it's going to be 7,000 of what? How many students are there at the tertiary institutions per annum? If over 3 years are going to... If how many students are there at the tertiary institutions to get up on, so that at the end of the day, we end up with this 7,000. So that we really close up those gaps which are there. Né? And then the second one was the issue of the major shortcomings which they raised from the bill. They say there's a possible force change in training and registration process. As I said that, if we're producing 7,000, as a country and a developmental state, if the profession don't change themselves so that they adapt to the needs of the country, there might be force change. What must we do in order not to have a force change in training and then in the registration process? And then they speak about also the conflict of laws and practice for engineering education. Let them expatiate on that. So that when they expatiate on that, we'll consider that as we refine the bill moving forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Noel.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think my question was answered about the NX. The enactment of the bill will result in the change of Excel's legal status, and the bill in its current form does not guarantee independent peer review in the setting of standards, the registration and accreditation process.
That's the one we packed, had a discussion on.
But
the first one, maybe.
As I said, this could result in the automatic cancellation of the international recognition of the registration of the 29,000. Professionals.
Yeah, but the issue is the... Are you done, Honourable Member? Oh, okay. Let's take a response, and I'm going to make a request that we need to... We've taken actually the whole morning on one presentation. But a very strict secretary, she do all sorts of things to me to...
Honourable Chair, there's a lot of questions. We would love to have answered them. We haven't got enough time. Just on the question of maths and science, for example, or the numbers of registered persons, 29,000, Honourable Ratsomthama, we should be double that, really, for a developmental state that we are, and it hurts me that there's such a slow number of people coming through. On the other hand, may I just say that whether a kid comes from anywhere, from Kosimvabo or Dumbe or anywhere, kids have got the natural abilities there. They just need enough teaching and grooming to become engineers and scientists and so on. It's in our system that we should be focusing on. And we can only do so much. We can only do what the Act says we must do. We cannot do beyond that. But on the issue of other councils, I'd like Mr. Bob Pullen to attend to that question about our relations with other councillors. The issue of There are shortage of funding, for example, which we acknowledge, but Mr. Poulant.
Madam Chair, with your permission, thank you for the opportunity. At the time when the current legislation was put on the statute book, there was a strong interaction between the various professions and the Department of Public Works to get to where we are. And when reality struck and these councils were established, some of them established with greenfields. There was no infrastructure. In fact, one of the professions was defined in law for the first time. There was no such a profession. And their representatives are here. And over the period, the first 3 or 4 years of the existence of the CBE, which is also a new body, and the new professions and the more established ones, there was a lot of interaction between ourselves, not necessarily those of us around the table here, and but our colleagues who've since then no longer on the council, and the newly established councils and their staff. And the suggestion put on the table was that the resources that ECSA has in the form of capacity to do administrative work, not the professional part, the capacity to do administrative work and to share the physical things. I'm talking about the administrative capacity to receive applications for registration, to process them in the administrative way up to the point where professional advisory committee comprising of peers can deal with them. That work has to be done by somebody, and we had that capacity. We also had the capacity to implement financial control measures. We had we still have their own financial control system, which we made available. We had office space, which we made available, all on a cost basis. Nothing more than pure marginal cost. That was the suggestion. It said that we would not interfere, or we did not offer to play the role of those councils, that we offer to give them the hard support up to the point when they begin to employ their own people.
But you're not answering the question. You see here, on page 14, it says additional funding should come from DGF.
Yeah.
Cross-subsidization of councils from fee income is unacceptable. We want to know what motivates you to say this, because this is not your personal income. It's not a voluntary association that gets membership fees. This is government money.
Madam Chair, I was answering the question about where we came from and what the offer was there.
We're looking at this question.
Okay, that question, I think the legality of that point I would ask my colleague Henning Fulhuyn to speak on. That's not the legal part is not my discipline.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I notice a certain conception about the assets of ECSA. ECSA has been created through statute, but I've got the PFMA here, and the schedule to the PFMA does not mention ECSA. As a matter of fact, it doesn't even mention
the CBE. But it's a statutory body. What? Where do you account?
It's a statutory body, but the fees, the registration fees paid into ECSA's account, is ECSA's money. It does not it's not a tax. It's not paid into the fiscus. It remains the asset of ECSA, and ECSA collects that on behalf of its registered members. That does not mean it becomes public money or state money.
Let's take the official drafter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the nature of all statutory bodies and other government business enterprises, funds that are put together to fulfill a legislative purpose cannot be owned by individuals, even if they are registered professionals and the body has been created to render certain services to them. Now, the new body, which is being brought about, which is the SACBE, will be fulfilling exactly precisely a similar legislative mandate. Now,
That's why CBE comes there to report about your budgets, even if we don't give you money. That's why they come here and account about your spending.
Madam,
so there's a misconception here about, so that money is public funds. That's why you account, even if you are not giving, you account for those funds because they are public funds.
Madam, if I may respond to that, we're talking now about excess assets. Before this new bill will come into operation, ECSA has legal personality. It owns those assets. And if the state takes those assets without compensation, it will be in violation of Section 25
assets
of the Constitution.
We did not speak about assets. We're speaking about page 14, the last additional funding. We're talking about funds. You say cost subsidization of councils for fee income is unacceptable. Now I'm asking you, why are you saying that? Now it's assets. We have not yet come to assets. We'll come to assets. We still need to understand this one. Next person again. Now we're going around the circle. So there's no answer basically. If we're going to the third person, I'm starting to be worried. Especially about time.
Is Madam Chair, we think it will be the responsibility of the state that will have to pay the retrenchment fees and pay the smaller councils to help them to establish proper infrastructure.
With the money you are collecting on behalf of the government, because that money, the registration fees, you are collecting on behalf of government.
And the taxpayers' money, madam.
Yes, but you are collecting it in the name of government, so they are public funds. So why is the problem if government uses that funds to subsidize others? Well, it's a difficult question. Let's leave it. Honorable Speed, is the follow-up to the same issue.
Okay, if you would allow me just to make a comment, because I think I can
No, before it is on this issue. No, you can't clarify on their behalf. If you want to make a follow-up question,
no,
you can.
We as Parliament need to get our housing.
Just hold it there, Honourable Member. Honourable Blanchet, I need to address you. And this time, really. If in any way you don't want me to preside over this meeting, at some point I'm going to request you to leave the meeting. I am going to request you for the last time that you allow me to preside over this meeting, and if you can't really, you must excuse us today. Honorable Spears, a question was asked by Mr. Madum, it's here, that why it's AXA saying it's unacceptable to use public funds to subsidize other councils. We have not yet received that answer. And I was about to close it because it's a difficult question. Because every time we ask it, it's shifted to other people who are going to the third person. Now, I want to know from you, it's a procedural issue. Are you asking a question, a follow-up question, or not? If it's a different matter altogether, let's wait, they finish, then we take your matter. So is it a follow-up question to this matter?
I think I can mention what I have to mention afterwards.
Is it
as well.
A follow-up question to this matter?
It's not a question, it's a comment.
I will give you a chance later to make comments. Can we wrap up on this issue? If there's no answer, let's leave it. Honorable Opperman?
You must allow us to take part in this discussion.
Procedurally, I will allow you to take part in the discussion. If you have a procedural issue to raise, raise it.
But
if you want to ask
the question, the Honorable Member wants to make a contribution.
I said I will come to him for the comment. I said let's wrap up on this matter. He's not asking a follow-up question. So if he wants to make a comment, I said I will come back to him for the comment.
But it's in connection with this matter.
I said I will allow him to come back. You cannot be his spokesperson. You can't.
Madam, you cannot overrule...
No, I'm overruling you. Actually, you are out of order.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm saying you are out of order, Honorable Member. Because I said I will come back to him for that comment.
So you want to take all the space. You want to take all the space.
If that's what you think, it's fine. But you are out of line. And you can't be his spokesperson. He's an adult enough to speak for himself. Let's get the round up, please.
Madam Chair, as I said, there's a number of questions we'd love to answer to. Honorable Maduma asked about clarity on the usefulness of the bill as envisaged. ECSA's position has always been that we welcome improvements. We have made proposals already, as I presented earlier, and we would like to see improvements. All we are concerned about is this bill as it is at the moment. There was a question about demographics.
Before we go on, I think we agree that there's no answer for this question.
Okay.
There is no answer why we cannot use public funds to fund other councils. People just say it's unacceptable, but there's no legal reason why we should not. So we take it that we will not consider this issue because there's no legal reason advanced in the meeting why we cannot use public funds to fund councils. I have not heard anybody saying it, so we'll just take it as a comment. I want, before you continue, to give Honorable Spies an opportunity to make a comment on this issue.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to point out one issue that came to my mind, and I think it is we as a committee, or it might have been unintentional, but we are making a fundamental mistake by reasoning that the monies that are being accrued by these institutions are public monies and that they have the nature of taxes. If that was to be the case, then the whole process that we are busy with at the moment would have been unconstitutional, because then this bill would not have been a bill regulating a profession. Then this bill would have been a money bill, which in terms of the Constitution need to be introduced by the Minister of Finance. Only the Minister of Finance can introduce a bill in Parliament that deals with forms of taxes and forms of public money being collected from members of the public. If this is not the case, then certainly, if the intention is not to talk about a money bill here, then the nature of these membership fees, the nature of the assets that belongs to the different bodies, must be something different than what we know as tax money or public money or anything of that kind. I am concerned about the fact that we are confusing.
Yeah, but did you read the clause in the legislation?
I did.
What does it say? Can you read it out for us?
Which legislation are you talking about? The Constitution.
The clause that refers to transfer.
I'm talking about the argument that is before us that says that we are dealing with public money.
Honorable Spies, you see, you are mistaking the discussion, and I want you to read the clause that you are referring to in the legislation, so that you can understand what is this discussion, and that's where you will realize that we never talked about taxes here. Can you read it out for us?
Let me first say what I am talking about so that we understand each other, because I am concerned that we are engaged in a kind of discussion between people who are not listening to each other. The clause that is under discussion now is clause 51(4). Which says that from the effective date, all rights, obligations, assets and liabilities acquired or incurred by the councils referred to in subsection 2A to G vest in the council, and the council must be regarded as having acquired the incurred those rights, obligations, assets and liabilities in terms of this act. Now, this specific clause or this subsection is the reason for the objection that has been raised, and the wording that's been used is confiscation of assets. It could be expropriation of assets. It could be anything. You can call it by any name. The fact of the matter is that we are legislating here the disposition of certain assets from one body and the transfer of those assets to a new body that's being established in terms of this new act. My concern is, and the reasoning that we are following at the moment, and I'm just urging the committee to question our own reasoning. Our reasoning, or the reasoning of the majority of this committee so far, is, well, we are allowed to do this because the nature of those assets and the nature of the membership fees by which those assets were acquired are public. They are public by nature. They have the nature of a tax of some kind. I'm concerned about the fact that this committee is making a fundamental mistake in this regard. We are not imposing a tax by allowing a private entity or an independent body created by statute to levy membership fees. That's not a form of tax. If it were to be a tax, then this
bill couldn't have been introduced here. So that was the only reasoning that
that's
I tried to
convey. That's why you are missing the point, Honorable Member, and I'm going to ask the trustees to clarify you again for the second time. And that's why I said you must read it, because you are reading it for the first time. You were not part of the discussions even earlier and how we deal with this matter. But nevertheless, I want the trustees. I'll come to you, Honorable Member, wait. Trustees, can you intervene?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The transitional provision in question provides for a succession in effect from one statutory body to another statutory body. Both statutory bodies fulfill the same, in essence, function. Now, if you have regard to what are regarded as national public entities, and that is why the funds are characterized as public, with a reference to the PFMA, it reads as follows. National public entity means, I'll skip A, which is a government business enterprise, and I'll read B. It means a board, commission, company, corporation, fund, or other entity, which is established in terms of national legislation, which is both bodies, fully or substantially funded either from national revenue fund or by way of a tax, levy, or other money imposed in terms of national legislation and accountable to parliament. Now, what
they
do...
Just stop there. I just wanted to clarify the honorable member because it did not read that part. But nevertheless, it's what is in the PFMA. He was denying it. That is not there. So we who have read it, we knew that we are speaking from what is there in black and white. Honorable, I'll come back to that. Honorable Blanchet.
Madam Chair, I want to also just use another example. Political parties, us, members of parliament, are paying membership fees to various political parties. Should those parties decide to make one party and come together, then it still is not public money. It belongs to those parties. And that's what we should understand is happening here.
Lately, I had to explain what I explained in the morning. There's a difference between membership fees and registration fees by voluntary associations and by organizations established by an act of parliament. I said, for instance, the DA is not established by an act of parliament. Therefore, it's a voluntary association. People can join voluntarily and leave voluntarily and pay membership fees according to their institutional constitution. But if you are a statutory body established by an act of parliament, your funds are public funds. That's what the PFMA says. So let's leave this confusion, Honorable Members. Let's read. Right, Honorable Fees, I don't know where did you skip it. Next time when you come to this committee, don't take chances. We are readers here.
Chair, just for information's sake, some churches have also been created by statute. Some universities have been created by statute. That's the fact of the matter. That's our law in the country.
But that's why we're repealing those law about those churches. You see, that's why there's a stream of those repealing of those laws about those churches. Let's come with a different example, Honorable Members. I'm not convinced we're wasting our time. You don't have an issue at hand. This issue does not hold water. Try anything, Honorable Members. It's not there. Black and white, the law says it. So let's not misinterpret the law. It's very clear, not ambiguous. The gentlemen here before us, they could not themselves justify why. So let's not take the responsibility to justify what we cannot. Thank you very much. On this one, let's proceed. I'm giving this matter strictly 10 minutes.
Madam Chair, the one other question I'd like to respond to is on demographics. I've got some figures here from my colleagues. The figure, total figure is 29,811. Which consists of white registered members 22,998 and 6,813. And then there was a question about gender. It's 28,043 men and 1,768. All I can say, well, 2 points actually. As far as I'm aware, there's nothing in our processes that discriminates against anybody.
I disagree with you.
People behave.
We had presentations of people who believe that there's systemic issue, and we said that we'll do investigation on that one. Let's leave it at that.
The other one is that, as you can see, the trend is going up for black people. I'm sure of that. We visit universities for accreditation and so on, and we go beyond and we ask the same questions about transformation. And secondly, is that the numbers of whites, unless we continue to speed up even more training of engineers, will start declining because of age profile and so on. So there's a lot that's happening there, and members are free to consult further about it.
Thank you. About the number decline, including brain drain. It's in the report, yeah. Okay. My secretary is also asking me again. Now, we need to decide, honorable members, do you want to break for lunch? But I would suggest that if you do so, you take, because I know when the diabetic ones are not here today, I don't see them. Well, I'm also diabetic, so I'm not discriminating on them, but they are not here today. Do you want to break for lunch? Or do you want to have a working lunch, you take your food, you sit down and eat? You mustn't do that because you are okay. We need to have the house. Do we need to break for lunch, or do we need to have a working lunch, or what do we do? Any proposition? If there's anybody who's extremely hungry, there's food at the back. In an event that it's ruled out, what is the suggestion?
Comrade Chair, we cannot have extra for the whole morning. Even when you come back after lunch, you still have it. I think that they must finish all the questions which are in front of them so that we start with another group when we come back.
Well, we don't intend to have access the whole day. The more they ask, it seems as if the more they provoke. I thought that we have come to the end, really. I don't know whether you still want to hear more. I don't think there is answers, honorable member. But nevertheless, if you believe there are answers, let's take them.
Madam Chair, honorable Fadebe also asked a question about competing at the same level. Is it possible at this stage? Maybe Prof. Van Rahan can talk to the pipeline and how the transformation will happen.
Yes, I think, if one looks at the whole pipeline and asks the question, what is the potential effect that one can have at different stages, at the school stage, at the university stage, at the professional registration stage? I think it's clear that we have, despite the efforts of the Department of Education and the provinces, we still have a problem at the school level. We also have the great uncertainty brought about by the change of mathematics from the higher grade, lower grade system. And one of the honourable members asked a question about that, where this year we will have the new national senior certificate people coming out of the schools for the first time, where a vastly increased number of learners will in fact do the full mathematics rather than the mathematics literacy. And, of course, we now have something like six times that number, but we don't have six times the number of teachers relative to the year before. So there's this great unknown as to what's going to happen at the end of this year and possibly for the next few years while this new mathematics subject beds down. So it's
actually we need to note it. You are raising a very critical issue.
Yeah.
To say, do we have teachers that can match that? It's an issue that we need to discuss with our colleagues in education. So we'll note it.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's one of the main limitations. The higher education institutions that teach engineering are faced with declining student numbers because, among other reasons, the industry that they serve is coming along and poaching their staff for larger salaries, and increased numbers of students. So the ratios of students to staff has got to an unacceptable level, and the throughput of those institutions is not what it should be. So there's a second problem where one can have some impact, and EXA is in fact working with GIPSA on that one at the moment. And then I think the third one is to in fact work on what must be a relatively small number in the overall scheme of things of people who are finding impediments to getting training and to in industry and to meeting the requirements for registration. And again, EXA is working with GIPSA on that problem. Now, I can't speak on the corresponding problems in the other five professions, but that certainly is the situation in engineering. And we must bear in mind that if you're looking at for dramatic impacts, the school level is the place to make them. Higher education is the next. And the proportional increase that you can get in the training and registration system is actually relatively small. Because it's not working badly. Yeah.
Thank you. Is there still answers?
Madam Chair, there is a number of questions. There was a question about EXA's presentation, whether it's based on self-interest.
Well, let's jump.
I don't know if I can jump that one. I'll just leave it to the honourable members. On representation of EXA in the room, I won't comment on that. We've mentioned Dr. Chikanda is here. On the matter of Rakau, we felt that it's not appropriate for us to comment. There were certain appeal processes which were there, which exist. There's correspondence with him. We can deal with that in another forum. Unless members still have questions, I think we've addressed the questions as far as we could.
No, I don't think there is more questions. Then let's take a break just to collect our food, honorable members, and come back. Thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you.
also advised that there was a gentleman who was saying Umsaki must just fight and fight and fight during our discussions, Umsaki.
It's a respectful way of addressing a person.
That
I appreciate from you, ma'am.
I said Umsaki. May Opa say numbers Umsaki. That's who you also like Umsaki. Well, I'm really feeling sorry for our guests. That's how we behave in committees, you know. That's very normal. And me being the little chairperson, I can assure you, I never escape the brutality of Umsaki. Honorable Speaker, I hope you read some of the information whilst we're on lunch. Did you?
I enjoyed the lunch, Chairperson.
Lunch? You can't enjoy it. You must work for your lunch.
I work at night.
No. I can't see you at night. Well, I hope it's not another work that you can't discuss here. Okay, honorable members. Well, yes, I'm very worried about that one. Do you pay membership fees also there, honorable member? Ms. Madonsela, I hope there's a fair amount of people back in the room, but I don't see other members. I don't know. Perhaps they went to the convenience room and all that, they will come back. But don't take it personal. It happens a lot. They go and check their mail and come back again. So they might be checking some emails and talking to their secretaries, and they will be here very soon. So let's proceed with the presentation. I hope.